Welcome to the IDP Show. I'm your host, Josh Raymer, joined in the virtual SoCheck tonight by PFF's finest. You know him from the north of the border, beyond the Great Wall. It's John Macri. John, how are you, my friend?
I am doing good. I'm happy to be back and previewing week six. This is, season's moving along quickly for some, slowly for others. But I think you picked a good night to record, too. Kind of saved us from the torture that is tonight's Thursday night football game.
Yeah, I don't really have the volume on with the Thursday night pregame on Amazon, but apparently Tony Gonzalez called it the JV teams of the NFL. So just a ringing endorsement from one of your, pregame analysts for the game that he's trying to get people excited for. So yeah. I love the honesty. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm a big fan of when analysts actually say that these teams suck and this game sucks and we're all worse for watching this. But, bro, like, you're getting paid a lot of money to hype these games up. At the end of the day, you're part of the entertainment here, right?
For sure. You got to embrace it to some extent. But, at the same time, you don't want to scare people away too badly because, I was just watching the first quarter and I was starting to get PTSD from last week's Thursday night game. So, let me know if anything exciting happens, if you have the TV on in the shed there, but I have a feeling nothing too exciting is going to happen.
Yeah, I didn't even feel compelled to turn the TV on. If that tells you anything about the quality of tonight's game, don't need to watch it. I have a spidey sense that if the Commanders lose in embarrassing fashion, Ron Rivera is getting fired.
You think so, eh?
Yeah, just with the quarterback comment. Did you see the Daniel Snyder stuff today?
I saw that. I got like a notification for some sports media network on my phone, but I didn't get a chance to look into any of it.
So the rumor is he hired a private investigator to dig up dirt on the NFL owners and Roger Goodell to use as blackmail if they tried to vote him out of the NFL. That is now. Here's the thing. Gosh. That is so believable to use a Bill Simmons-ism. Daniel Snyder is in the Tyson zone. You could tell me anything about Daniel Snyder, and I'd be like, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah. He's looking to cover his own ass here, but yeah. Oh, my God. That's pretty wild. I'd be interested to kind of see what this private investigator finds. I'm sure there's going to be some things, considering some of the owners in the NFL.
Well, it came out, no joke, probably about 2 to 3 hours after I saw that story, I got another notification that was like, it's not on the table to vote out Daniel Snyder at the next owners meeting. So it's like, I don't know if that was always the plan or if he was just pulling out the big guns to stop that from happening.
It's not on the table. It's in the paper shredder now.
Yeah, it's gone. It's off the table. So anyways, yes, tonight's game is a snoozer. So what a great time to preview week six. As John said, at what point, John, do they stop airing the NFL Network commercials? That's like, football is back. Are you excited? It's now, right? Like, I think week six is kind of when we turn off the football is back commercials.
Yeah. I mean, once you cross the first month of the season, like, we know it's back. We get it now. It's, I mean, there's other sports coming back now too, right? Like, hockey's coming back, basketball's coming back. So yeah, football's been back. So I think they can definitely chill out with those commercials.
Chill out just a little bit. But yes, it is weird. We are already in week six. It feels like the off season drags on forever. And then when the season gets here, it just whizzes by. But we've got a great episode for y'all tonight. We are going to be doing some sneaky starts at defensive line, linebacker, and DB for y'all. We're going to be talking about some takeaways from John's utilization report, which you can check out at pff.com. We're going to hit some pop culture stuff. We're going to talk some all 22. It's going to be a fun episode, John. Let's dive into it. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right, let's kick things off like we did last time, talking all 22. And I want to start here, John, because your boy has gotten a couple dubs in a row, turning the corner. We're figuring it out. Actually, I'm not. But hey, I'm going to enjoy these two wins while they're coming my way.
Yeah, on an absolute heater right now. You love to see it. Two wins in a row, that's big. I mean, I strung together a couple. I lost last week. You know, it's funny. I'm a little bit superstitious when it comes to sports and to fantasy and things like that. Last time we recorded, I had come on and I was talking about how I lost by like 0.6 points or something like that. I had won three straight after that. I lost again by, I think, what was 0.5 or 0.6, something like that, to Tom. Was pretty devastated that I couldn't move to 4-1. But that was the story of what my entire fantasy week was last week. It was brutal, which, you know, those weeks happen. But I mean, all 22 has been, yeah, it's been so much fun. Aaron Rodgers continues to be the either what keeps my team going or what absolutely kills them. And, you know, it was starting to look like he was going to get invited back to Thanksgiving dinner. And then he went out and disgraced the family again. So he is back on the outs handing us another loss with his terrible performance in London. So that was disappointing. But I mean, yeah, I think we play each other this week.
We do. We play each other in XFFL. Adam, Bobby, and I were talking about it a little bit after we ended last the podcast on Tuesday. It's hard to get a win in there this season. The league has leveled up. Everyone, even the lower teams, have come up now. Everyone can beat everyone on any given week, which has not always been the case in this league.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been tight. I mean, my two losses this year have been like, I was the second highest scorer of the week. The first loss, I lost to the highest scorer. Shout out Leezy. And then last week, I think I lost by like 4 points, something like that, because Nick Bosa left the game. And it just like, I was like, again, this is the story of my entire fantasy week last year. It was just like heartbreakers, and it about broke me in week five. So, but yeah, it's been very competitive. So yeah, we play each other there this week, and we play each other at all 22. So
it's, do we really?
Rivalry week. Yeah.
Okay. So we need to be much meaner to each other on the show. Yeah. No, I think I just, you know, just praying for the best in all 22. Still don't have a solid grip on strategy. I learned some stuff doing the show with the all 22 guys of like what kind of matchups to target and guys to pick up and that sort of thing. And that worked. I did that last week with the lineup and got the win. So I think it was my biggest win of the season. So we'll take it. Right. But I also want to shout out the guys because I saw they just announced that the player news feed is live on the all 22 website. So if you click on a player and it pulls up their player card, now they have news sources that feed into that player news tab on the player card. So I think that just rolled out this week. Very cool feature. And John, one of the things we've talked about before with all 22, those guys are constantly improving this product, and another cool innovation from Chris, Bobby, and Ray.
That's awesome. Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah, that is cool. I love how they're constantly upgrading. Like, you could tell that they're committed to making the product better. Like, and it's not just an annual thing. They're upgrading in season like that. You love to see it. I forgot to ask you, I keep forgetting to check. Did you win your matchup against them?
Okay, so a bit of dirty pool. I think the guys were feeling bad that they got dinged by the auto sub because I don't think they gave me a replacement for whatever receiver. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I flagged it. I was like, hey, guys, Amon-Ra St. Brown is out, but I got busy. I wasn't able to look up a replacement. And I think they just left him in and ended up losing by a score that a replacement wide receiver could have gotten. So little bit of dirty pull, but yeah, they evened up 1-1. And did they beat the guy from PFF last week?
I don't know.
I have to check.
I've been behind on a lot of stuff. I maybe as somebody else from PFF.
I thought so. I thought they had someone from PFF.
Maybe Sam or Steve, maybe.
Yeah, following me up. So we'll check into that here while we're recording and see if the all 22 guys are beating the other folks that they have been playing. But yeah, they handed me an L, but it was a close game. It was a lot of fun. If you haven't checked it out, go check out that episode. It's available as an audio podcast and as a YouTube video as well. But John, let's talk about some of the solid off the radar starts at DL, LB, and DB for this week. We want to include some more preview elements And of course, you're doing the rankings, you're doing the utilization report, the OLDL matchup article now. So I asked you to pull a few starts that you felt good about. Who was your first one for the D-line position?
Yeah, so not that he's super off the radar or anything like that, but I really like Za'Darius Smith as kind of one of those, you know, deeper leagues, somebody that you might, it might not be like the most obvious start. So Za'Darius Smith, edge rusher for the Minnesota Vikings going against the Miami Dolphins. Not exactly like tearing it up in terms of pass rush metrics so far this year. I think it's a 69.5 pass rush grade, but he does, I mean, 18 pressures isn't bad. That's actually pretty solid for whatever it is, 4 or 5 games. And he's been getting a couple sacks as well. I think he's 2.5 or 3 sacks on the season. But what I like about him this week is, well, firstly, Miami's likely rolling out Skylar Thompson again at quarterback. So that's their third string quarterback. But maybe worse than that is that left tackle Teron Armstead is still not practicing. He got hurt last game. So Miami had to put in Brandon Shell at left tackle, and he got absolutely whooped. He managed a 15.2 pass blocking grade and allowed 7 pressures on just 35 pass blocking snaps. So he's not quite NFL material, but Za'Darius Smith definitely is. If Brandon Shell has to start at left tackle again this week, and Za'Darius Smith doesn't like just rush from the right, like the right side of the defensive line. Danielle Hunter will get in there as well, but Danielle Hunter is a more obvious start. But Za'Darius mostly rushes against the left tackle. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there for Smith and Hunter to get home this week.
Love that. That is a recipe for success. If you're an edge rusher, is get Skylar Thompson in his first NFL start and then Brandon Shell of a human being as the starting left tackle in replacement of Teron Armstead, who's on the all 22 squad. So nice. Not doing me any favors with the extended absences, but I kind of knew when I signed up for the Teron Armstead experience, what I was going to get. And what you're going to get is extended absences from this guy. So I checked while you were talking about Za'Darius Smith, and it was PFF Sam went down 70.5 to 68.3. So the all 22 crew goes up 1-0 over the PFF guys. So I guess, well, you were counted in the IDP tally. So they're 1-1 in IDP and 1-0 against the PFF guys. So
I'm the only one to beat them so far. So
that's right.
They're going to have to come back for a rematch at some point.
There, you continue to be a witch, John Macri. But speaking of which, let's move now to a DB start that I know Addy actually brought up in our Week 5 recap episode. Check that out if you haven't yet. We tried a different format going game by game, hitting on the relevant IDPs for both teams, hitting on the news. It was a lot of fun. I think we talked about probably like 150 players. So go check that out. It was a fun episode. But Adam actually mentioned this player for the Seattle Seahawks. Who are we talking about here, John?
Yeah, for sure. Shout out, Adam. As we know, unreal eye for talent and a tremendous presence in this space. But it's Ryan Neal, the safety for the Seattle Seahawks going against the Cardinals. So Josh Jones was replacing Jamal Adams in that more box-heavy safety role in Seattle, but it looks like Seattle's already benched him. They've moved on, which is a good thing because he's been super ineffective for IDP as well. He just hasn't been efficient in the role, considering his alignments and everything like that. That should help our safeties for IDP. Didn't work, but so they put Ryan Neal in, and Adam mentioned it last week. He's been productive when we've needed him for IDP, right? And he's right. I mean, he's going to be playing in that exact same role. It's around 50% in the box. That's where he was last week. And he was productive. He posted 7 tackles, had a pass breakup in there. Arizona's not like the greatest matchups for safeties. You know, Kyler Pinball Murray likes to scramble around and scurry about the field, but like a toddler who had just stole your phone. I saw that video. Yeah, it's a great video. But yeah, so at the very least, I like Ryan Neal just to be season long, a more efficient option than what Josh Jones was, because, you know, Jamal Adams is a good IDP, obviously, but Josh Jones was not a one for one replacement. It wasn't even close, but I think Ryan Neal could at least provide a little bit more from that position.
Yeah. We're hopefully going to get a solid Neal performance, because I think that Jamal Adams absence and injury, the reverberations are still being felt to that, especially the DB landscape being as kind of up and down and sort of unsettled as it's been in a while. We need some guys to step up, and hopefully with Josh Jones out of the way, Ryan Neal can now step into that role and produce. And like you and Adam pointed out, he's done it in the past. So I have optimism as well. And anytime that you have a four-year-old with a phone back there playing quarterback, he's going to hopefully present lots of opportunities for TFLs, for sacks, and whatnot. So let's keep it rolling here, John, and highlight. This is typically Johnny the Greek's territory, but I love that you included a cornerback start. And no surprise, it is from the game that should produce the most fireworks from this weekend, Bills Chiefs. Who is the cornerback you want to highlight?
Yeah, so I just wanted to throw it in there, and I don't mean to step on Johnny the Greek's cornerback toes, but I was doing my rankings this week and kind of digging through the corners and trying to figure out where to place these guys, but Kaiir Elam kind of stood out to me. He's been a starting corner here for the Bills, and they're playing the Chiefs this weekend. And interestingly enough, he had only played like half the snaps through the first 2 weeks of the season. So he wasn't a full-time player. They got some injuries there at corner, and he I believe he's a first round pick. Yeah. He's a first round pick.
He was.
Yeah. So they were looking to maybe ease him in there, but you know, injuries kind of forced him into a starting spot. And now he stepped into an every down role in week three. And he's already in the top 12 in total tackles for cornerbacks this season. So he's racking up tackles. He's doing a nice job. Teron Johnson, we all know, is kind of a good tackler there as well at corner. But Kaiir Elam has been step for step with him each week. I mean, the Chiefs offense, we know, is they're going to be passing a ton. There's going to be a plenty of opportunities for, I mean, all the corners really in that game for both sides. So it's one of those games where it's kind of obvious, you know, start your corners in that one. But I just thought Kaiir Elam was a little bit interesting and somebody that could maybe be picked up off waivers, because he wasn't probably somebody that was started in the first 2 weeks or rostered. And he's kind of moving up the ranks now.
You love that. It's the trifecta, right, of cornerback start kind of check boxes. You have ascending into a full-time role, check. Efficient tackler, check. Getting a high volume passing attack coming into town, three checks. Put Kaiir Elam into your lineups, and of course on the other side, put Legarius Sneed into your lineups as well, John. That guy has been sensational this season.
Yeah, he's been the king of the corners this year. That guy he's racking up sacks. He's just filling the box score in every way possible. He's been amazing.
We were wondering which safety would be the beneficiary of Honey Badger's departure, of Dirty Dan, the tackle missing man's departure. Would it be Brian Cook? Would it be Justin Reed? Turns out, Legarius Sneed.
Yeah. Yeah, they just pop Legarius Sneed into that that role. Just have him running around the field and making plays. You love to see that. So, he's locked in as my CB1 kind of going forward. I don't see any reason to take him out of that spot.
I think we may be getting some votes for Legarius Sneed when we do this year's IDP MVP episode, because he is just one of those guys that makes IDP fun to play. It's the reason that we like to do this, right? So last up here, we have another long-haired linebacker, and we are not talking about Porn Thor. It's a different long-haired man that's going to be stepping in for one of Adam's favorites, at least for the time being, John. Who do you want to highlight here?
Yeah, so this is Porn Thor's stunt double here who fills in for him.
That's a great nickname. I'm going to have to roll that one out on Twitter.
But he's more efficient, you know, and maybe that's why he's the stunt double. He fills in the longer periods when, you know, the face doesn't need to be on screen kind of thing. Alex Singleton of the Denver Broncos versus the LA Chargers. So he was... I mean, the top waiver wire pickup for the week, I think most people were on that in leagues that he was available, just because of the Josie Jewell knee injury. He's considered week to week. So most likely not going to be playing this week. I'd say he's probably safe to say he won't play this week, but we don't know going forward. So if you're looking for, you know, a 1 week player that that can have a decent week, I think Alex Singleton could be a top tier contributor for the Broncos. He has that LB1 role most likely while Jonas Griffith plays the part-time role. And Denver's been a pretty friendly defense for their LB1. They're a top five team in zone coverage rate, which is a benefit for linebacker tackle efficiency. And they're also top five in cover six rate, which so far this season has been the most efficient tackling scheme for our linebackers as well. So those kind of check boxes, again, things that, you know, create efficiency for linebackers, because it's not necessarily always has to do with the skill or the talent of the player, but more the defense that they play in. Alex Singleton is checking all those boxes.
Yeah. Until we get our beloved Josie Jewell back.
Yep.
Get Porn Thor's stunt double in there, the greasy hair. Hey, at least you know when he's going to make a tackle. That was one thing I was able to keep track of in that god-awful Thursday night game was, oh, there's Alex Singleton with another tackle, because you can't miss the long hair whenever he gets up off the turf after making a tackle.
No, it's impossible to miss. And yeah, he always pops up every single season. He becomes a waiver wire claim, it seems. And you know what? To his credit, he does well for IDP. I just wouldn't want him as a linebacker if I was a fan of any of those teams that he's been on.
He's IDP herpes. He pops up from time to time, and thankfully he doesn't stick around long.
Yeah.
There you go. The multiple nickname options out there, folks, whichever one you want to go with.
Yeah.
So before we move on to the listener questions, John, this reminds me, this role, this kind of Josie Jewell role, AJ Johnson previously, right? Now Alex Singleton stepping into it. It seems like there are just some teams where that linebacker one role is very profitable. And we mentioned one on the recap show, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Carolina Panthers. Of course, we've seen Luke Kuechly, who's a Hall of Fame player, but Shaq Thompson, Frankie Louvu, now Damian Wilson puts up a 30 burger this past week. Are the Panthers just one of those teams where whoever the warm body is at linebacker one, that player is going to produce?
I mean, so far this year, it kind of has felt that way. I mean, Damian Wilson, interestingly enough, he wasn't even like the full-time player for them. I think he only played 66% of the snaps. He just ended up being in the more efficient player. He had like a 19% tackle efficiency. But Shaq Thompson and Corey Littleton played in those top roles, but they were both actually like well below the average for linebacker tackle efficiency last week. So it's possible that, you know, it could be a good defense for one linebacker, but if it's going to be the low guy on the snap share, it might be one of those things where week to week, it's hard to depend on which guy that's going to be, right? There's those defenses as well. So, I'm hoping that Frankie Louvu gets back, because he was actually really good. As long as he wasn't, you know, lining up on the edge a ton, and he hasn't really been doing that other than I think the first week of the season. So, it could be. I would like to check what their coverage. Yeah, I mean, they're a top 10 team in zone coverage. They're actually not a bad defense, surprisingly. They're 41.5% EPA percentage allowed, which is ninth in the NFL. So that defense actually isn't bad. The offense, on the other hand, is something else.
It's the bottom of the barrel. It's a lot like the Colts right now. Terrible offense. Yeah. Defense has been playing pretty well, about as well as can be expected, especially for the Colts when you're missing Shaq Leonard. So, but let's keep things rolling here, John. I wanted to highlight a couple of nuggets from the utilization report that is just a beautiful piece of work that you put out every week. I picture you hitting publish and then this literally collapsing onto your desk in a pool of snot and blood and tears and sweat. So folks, go get you a PFF sub and enjoy the fruits of John's labor. He died so we could live and win our IDP matchup. So John, let's stay in Denver. We mentioned Alex Singleton. What was another thing that jumped out to you from this week's utilization report?
Yeah, so Baron Browning had a monster game for the Broncos playing off the edge there, and he actually set some PFF records, and I want to get them exact here, because I I don't want to get that wrong. But so he did injure his wrist and left the game, but he's been practicing in full. It looks like he's off the injury report for this week, which is a great sign considering he'll be in line for another start with Randy Gregory on IR. But Browning had a 50% pressure rate and a 60% pass rush win rate, which were both the single best game for any edge defender in the PFF era. So that's from 2006 until now. And that's a minimum of 20 pass rush snaps, too. So it's not like a small sample size kind of thing. He absolutely dominated Matt Pryor and company.
There were several plays where I would look up and Baron Browning was already two or three steps upfield headed towards the quarterback, and Matt Pryor was just getting out of his stance.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like he was making our tackles move in slow motion. I have never seen anything like it, and the data backs it up. I mean, take a bow, Baron Browning setting PFF records, and really one of his first kind of spotlight starts, right, with Randy Gregory going on IR.
Yeah, yeah, it's basically like his first like true start as an edge rusher, and man, did he look good. I do want to see it like a couple more games just before, you know, we start moving him up the ranks, because some of that could be a result of just Matt Pryor being ass at the right tackle position. But to his credit, I mean, he really did look good. Like some of the jumps he got off the snap and just quick pass rush moves, like he's clearly like a natural at that position. They were playing him at off ball linebacker last year and he wasn't great. And then they moved him to the edge this year and he's looked amazing. So I'm excited by Baron Browning. He had like a big game in the preseason too at one point where he had like a 90 something pass rush grade. So there's been some big flashes there, and it's only a few games into this edge experiment for him, but I'm pretty hopeful, and he's definitely a player that I'm going to have my eye on week to week.
Love to see it. Baron Browning, thank you, Indianapolis Colts offensive line, for turning this guy into a record setter. But I'm a believer, man. I think that this guy has, as Adam pointed out, when he first made the switch, this is maybe salvaged or taken his NFL career in a direction that will prolong the longevity of it. And it also kind of salvaged his IDP value, because as a linebacker, not interested at all in Baron Browning. As an edge rusher, oh baby, especially if he is going to be doing even a fraction of what he was doing last Thursday night. I mean, that is primo stuff right there. And if you acquired Baron Browning, you probably did so on the cheap. So these are the best kind of IDPs to roster, because you may have a potential, you know, league-winning player that you paid almost nothing for. So, yeah, making the switch from linebacker to edge, getting the start in place of Randy Gregory. The stars aligned for Baron Browning, and he took advantage. So tip of the cap to Baron Browning. Another thing that you wanted to call out, John, was something that Evan Ronda talked about on the IDP Game Theory podcast, and something we mentioned on the recap pod. What the hell is going on with Baltimore's safeties with Marcus Williams going on IR?
Yeah, I'm starting to get really annoyed with the Ravens because the injury. I mean, well, starting with starting Chuck Clark over Kyle Hamilton, which, okay, I get it. You know, the guy's a rookie, and even though he was a first round pick, we all had high expectations for him. He didn't jump right into a starting role, which is one thing. But then Geno Stone played the every down role once Marcus Williams went out, and Hamilton just kind of stayed in his part-time role. He didn't really do anything else. There was no increase for Kyle Hamilton, which is pretty frustrating as somebody who was very high on Kyle Hamilton coming into the season and still am for Dynasty, but you get anxious, right? You want to see it right away. You want to see them put him out on the field in an every down role. And it's looking like they're leading into Geno Stone again this week. That's, you know, it's not the best thing. I get that, you know, the Ravens are a really smart team. They have a lot of good prospects. They've developed their players well, other than Patrick Queen. And then they're giving some opportunity.
What was that like aside there?
Something about, I don't know.
Patrick Queen, the king of queens.
But so they're giving him some, you know, developmental time, not throwing him into the fire right away, which, okay, I get it. They're But, you know, as fans and as IDP managers, for sure, we want to see him play every down. So I'll watch the snap counts this week. Hopefully, you know, Hamilton sees an increase. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if Geno Stone is steps right into the Marcus Williams role and plays every snap.
And I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Because we were having questions with Marcus Williams, like, should we keep plugging this guy back in? Like, this is not traditionally a safety that you feel great about putting into your lineups because he's kind of boom bust. Now, he was booming all season, so you felt good finally secure in starting this guy week in and week out. Goes on IR. Hopefully we'll be back this season. Saw he got dropped in the XFFL. That was a kind of a gut punch. I don't blame the manager, whoever had him, because it was a one-year deal, so you're not going to like eat that money with Marcus Williams on the shelf. But yeah, man, I'm not touching either Geno Stone or Kayham until we get a little more clarity. And then let's see if Geno can play the guitar. We know the other Geno is playing guitar for the Seattle Seahawks right now very well. But can the Stone variety of the Geno Bros play safety for the Ravens? I don't know. I'm hoping we get Kayham sooner rather than later there in Baltimore.
I hope so, man. I mean, yeah, I don't want to watch Geno Stone. Let's be honest. When that draft came, every analyst was excited about how the Ravens could use Kyle Hamilton in a variety of different ways, and they just really haven't done it yet. And part of that could be on him. It probably is. But at some point, you got to get that guy out on the field a little bit more and kind of let him learn on the fly a little bit as well. So we'll see. They're easing him in, and yeah. We'll deal with Geno Stone this week, I think, but hopefully it's Hamilton sooner rather than later.
We can only hope. Yep. Let's move to the listener questions here, John. And thank you to all of our supporters over at theidpshow.com. If you'd like to sign up over there, we have monthly and annual plans and some great perks. If you sign up to support the show, we've got Adam's Dynasty Rankings. I see dude in there every single day updating the ranks for y'all. So get over there and check them out. They are awesome, awesome resource. We have these listener Q&A threads. We have the weekly waiver wire article. We have Lee's Banged Up podcast where he goes through the IDP injuries. As far as I know, there's no other podcast that does that on Saturdays for you. So check it out over there at theidpshow.com. We got one question this week, John, so let's dig into it. From Eric Harms, what are your thoughts on Deion Jones and Blake Martinez and their impacts on their new teams? Of course, Deion Jones getting traded on Sunday to the Cleveland Browns, and then Blake Martinez signing with the Las Vegas Raiders. John, how do Deion Jones, Debo, and B-Mart affect their new teams?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I did like how Deion Jones was traded basically as soon as the Browns game wrapped up after getting run on by Austin Eckler. Like,
yes, that was like probably the coach was, or the GM was like making the call during the game, probably.
It's like, get these bums off the field. I need somebody.
Seriously. Anybody.
So yeah, we'll start with the Raiders, I guess. I mean, I know most people are concerned about Divine Diablo. He's been playing that every down role for the Raiders this season. I have a decent amount of confidence that Divine Diablo holds on to that every down role in Vegas over even Blake Martinez. I think he moves a bit better in space. I think he can make at least some plays in coverage being a former safety, which, you know, it's more than we could say for a lot of linebackers, and Martinez kind of included in there. So Denzel Perriman is probably still going to get some snaps in there as well. I do think it's very possible that Martinez can overtake him if he sticks with the team a little bit longer. And I do worry about your baby Jayon Brown. That's the one that seems like he's going to be on the outs here. He hasn't really been doing much this season as far as a snap share and things like that. So it seems like, you know, Martinez is brought in as kind of to shore up that linebacker core a little bit more. And, you know, he's a solid veteran. He's not amazing by any means. I don't think he's bad, but I think Divine Diablo has more upside if you're looking for like an actual NFL defender. So I that's just my thoughts. I mean, we'll know once we see what the snap shares are and everything on the field, but I have confidence that Diablo could hold over Martinez.
Yeah, my thoughts on this are that Deion Jones, I'm sorry, that Blake Martinez was not brought in as replacement for Divine Diablo. He was brought in as both a Jayon Brown replacement and as insurance in case we see more Denzel Perryman concussions or injuries knocking the 2021 IDP star out of the lineup for an extended period of time. So I don't think this is a situation where they brought in B-Mart to be their LB1. I think he is mainly a Jayon replacement and insurance for both Jayon and Perryman. So it's still though, do I have like a ton of I don't have 100% confidence. I'm with you. If I had to bet, I think Divine Diablo retains that LB1 role. But it is worrisome whenever a team that has a lot of options at the position brings in a wild card that we don't know how is going to impact these linebackers, and it's his former defensive coordinator, and it's a guy in Divine Diablo who has just taken that role and is kind of five games into it with him being the LB1 there. So not like a 5 or 6 year starter we're talking about that's entrenched. It makes me a little nervous. I would not be shocked if we looked up at the end of the season and B-Mart was playing the majority of snaps as the LB1 for the Raiders. I still think it'll be Double D. I think this coach and GM combo, that is the guy they want there in the middle. So I think as long as he's healthy, it's going to be Double D. But man, it muddies the waters, and it's just sort of a bummer because beautiful name. Beautiful, you know, ability thus far. He's been scoring well for us. So please, Lord, just don't take Double D from us, John. That's I don't ask for much.
Yeah.
Don't take Double D from us.
He's a fighting chicken. He's going to keep fighting. He's going to claw his way past Blake Martinez each week. I'm 100% with you. I mean, a lot of it has to do with insurance too. Linebacker is such a tough position to play. There's a lot of really, really bad linebackers out there. It's also one of the more injured positions every year. So, you know, you lose a guy at a position like linebacker, and it's a pretty steep drop off when you look at backups for your team. I mean, Alex Singleton being a prime example, right? So, that some of it probably has to do with that insurance that you mentioned with Denzel Perryman. But I still feel pretty good about Divine Diablo.
I do as well. Let's talk about another situation, though, that's become muddy, no pun intended, with it being the Cleveland Browns. John, Deion Jones comes over from Atlanta, provides a little bit of clarity over there. I think that we're going to see some Troy Anderson this weekend, it sounds like, which would be a lot of fun. I know Adam's excited to get Anderson in the lineup over there in Atlanta. But with Debo out of the way, less complicated now in ATL, more complicated in Cleveland. How do you see Debo impacting his new team?
Yeah, so that this one is, I think, really, really interesting. I think he's been kind of one of the pieces that there's been so much uncertainty about this season because of, you know, what's going on in Atlanta and the late back surgery and all this other stuff. So they finally trade him, goes to the Browns. I don't know if he's going to play every down. But I think there's a better chance that Deion Jones leads the linebackers in snaps in Cleveland than Blake Martinez does in Vegas. But just the way that the Browns have utilized their linebackers these past few seasons, it just doesn't give me like a ton of confidence about any of them, really. There's not really an every down player there. They do rotate a fair bit. I mean, I know Jacob Phillips has played 100% the past 2 weeks, but I don't think that's something that they want to continue. I mean, obviously they traded for Deion Jones probably for that very reason, and with Anthony Walker going on IR as well. So, you know, I think he can work his way to the top of the depth chart there. Last year was one of his worst years. But prior to that, nobody was really calling Deion Jones finished or washed or anything like that. So after just one season, it's really hard to kind of write a guy off. He was one of the better linebackers in the NFL. I think he can work his way up there. Maybe it's around 80%, somewhere around there. And then you get, you know, a 45% guy, a 20% guy. The Browns are kind of a messy linebacker core. Just the way that they've deployed Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah this season has been a pretty good example of that. Like, they're just not giving him the reins, and they're using guys like Phillips. So, look, I don't know. it's one I definitely want to see it. these are just kind of my initial thoughts. What the hell do I know? But I this is the way I kind of look at it. I think Deion Jones has a decent shot to play more than any other Browns linebacker week to week. I just don't know if it's going to be like this ideal IDP role like what we saw in Atlanta.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a downgrade in terms of what we saw for him last year alongside Foyse Aluakun. But unlike B-Mart, who was a street free agent for the first 5 weeks of the season, the Browns, again, on Sunday, traded for Deion Jones. That signals to me stronger intent with this player. So I have far more confidence in Deion Jones being an impact player for the Browns and for IDP than Blake Martinez. And if I had to put money on one of these kind of three horses in Cleveland, I put my money on Deion, because the team is telling us what they want, and what they want is a linebacker they don't have. So they had to go get him from Atlanta. And yes, is it going to be an ideal situation? No, I don't think we are going to see Deion Jones playing 100% of snaps. That would really surprise me. But will he be the leading snap linebacker by the end of the season, assuming health? I think so. I think that is where I would put my money. But I want to see it. To pull a Johnny the Greekism, don't get cute. Just avoid the situation until we have clarity. There's no need to be the guy rushing into the fray, waving the flag, saying, I know this, I know the answer, I figured it out. We don't know. We don't know anything. Geno Stone, Exhibit A, for why we need to have more, just more patience and self-awareness and just a little bit of humility, folks. Let's just wait. Let's take a wait-and-see approach when it comes to this. But I do like Debo more than Blake Martinez if we're comparing which guy is going to move the needle more for the NFL and IDP. I think it's Debo.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, and yeah, definitely, you're not starting Deion Jones this week. I might not even start Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah this week. And Jacob Phillips carries his own risk as well, right? So it's the group as a whole right now is a little bit messy. Definitely want to wait it out. I know Bobby just traded away Jacob Phillips as well, so shout out to him getting ahead of it there. He's always making moves, that Bobby, but that was a good one.
I think you guys have some sort of a handshake agreement to shout each other out on each episode. So yeah, Bobby, I think, made a trade right before we came on air. So the dude just stays making moves. But John, something that you are writing up this year for PFF is the O-line D-line matchups to target article. While Chris Collinsworth was coming off that week one kind of flu game performance, you snuck in there and grabbed another article, this time looking at some offensive players. One thing that Sigmund Blue mentioned in our episode last week that I don't think gets enough attention or is articulated enough in IDP is how knowing the defensive side of the ball, knowing the IDPs, how that impacts your ability to make better decisions with your offensive players, right? So that's what I'm looking at here. Is this is a great chance for us to talk a little offense. It's okay, folks. You don't have to be scared. We're going to talk some offense. But the context here that is important is John is doing this through the lens of his defensive understanding. And that's what IDP does. It makes you better able to understand why certain offensive players have advantageous matchups. So, John, who was the first target that you wanted to mention with this sort of backdrop?
Yeah, so it is. It's kind of a fun article I get to write every week, because I just basically pack it full of nuggets, and I get to write about offense, which I don't often get to talk about. So the target that I want to talk about, and I think everybody's, you know, kind of on this train at this point. Everybody wants to ride the hot hand. So if you need an excuse to do so, targeting Geno Smith and Tyler Lockett of the Seattle Seahawks going against the Cardinals this week. So Seattle's offensive line, they didn't start off great, but they've definitely improved. They were ranking in the bottom third of the league in pass blocking grade through the first 3 weeks. And then they improved dramatically over the past 2 weeks as they move into the top half of the league in pass blocking grade. The unit as a whole has a 71.4 pass blocking grade. So really strong numbers there. And as we know, the Cardinals defensive line isn't great. But when you look at Seattle, they've actually only allowed one sack and 11 pressures the past 2 weeks versus the six sacks and 38 pressures the first 3 weeks. So big difference there as well. Cardinals defensive line has managed a bottom five sack total, just 5.5 sacks on the year from that unit. And they are the 26th ranked pressure rate at 23.4%. So knowing this, you look at Geno Smith, how does he perform from a clean pocket? He ranks first among all quarterbacks in big time throw rate when there's no pressure on the play. That's a 7.4% big time throw rate, which is, like I said, it's first. And he ranks second when given 2.5, sorry, in ranks second, and I think it's in big time throw rate as well. Second when given more than 2.5 seconds to throw. So he does generally take a little bit longer in the pocket, but his big time throw rate goes up to 10.2% when he has more time in that pocket. And then Lockett has been the main beneficiary of Geno Smith in that spot. So he ranks second among all wide receivers who have seen at least 10 targets in receiving grade. He ranks fifth in receiving yards with 242 and second in yards per route run when the time to throw is 2.5 seconds or more. So big time numbers backing up Geno Smith and Tyler Lockett to keep it going this week with more fire from Seattle.
Got him in our XFFL matchup. Feeling very good about that. And yes, I take back everything I said. No, this is fun. This is the story of the NFL season thus far.
Yeah,
is the Geno Sans in Seattle. John, they wrote him off, but Geno didn't write back.
That's right.
Yeah. And now we're getting to enjoy. It's going to go off the rails at some folks at some point, folks. I hate to break it to you. This is still Geno Smith we're talking about. I think he's going to turn back into a pumpkin. But hey, for now, if you're Seattle, baby, looking at Russell Wilson in the middle of a kitchen fire trying to cook there in Denver, and you've got Denver's pick, and you're not paying that guy all that money, and you're winning with Geno Smith and having fun, yeah, just enjoy the ride while you can. And it sounds like they're going to be enjoying it this weekend against the Arizona Cardinals defense. Like you said, bottom five sack total and the 26th ranked pressure rate. A defensive line. I mean, we're talking about Zach Allen, for God's sake. Like, is Zach Allen the best Cardinals pass rusher? John, we were trying to figure this out on Tuesday's episode.
I think it's still J.J. Watt, but I mean, Zach Allen has definitely been the more productive guy, right? J.J. Watt's still got some juice to him. He does well as far as our metrics go, but he's getting up there in age. It's a really poor defensive line right now.
Yeah, just a poor team in general. We're getting them for Hard Knocks, by the way, in case y'all forgot.
That's right. They are
the in-season Hard Knocks team, so it'll be fun to watch how much Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray hate each other and how much time Kyler spends playing Call of Duty instead of studying his playbook. Very excited for that. And I do think it was a Call of Duty reference with the all-green Hillary Clinton suit that he rolled out there on Sunday.
That was wild.
Great matchup for who would have thought we're talking about the Geno side of this matchup as opposed to the Kyler side,
Yeah. But
that's where we are. Let's talk about a running back that has been the topic of a lot of fantasy conversations this offseason because, like a lot of things in New England, it is difficult to decipher who is the guy you want, but who's the running back that you want to highlight against those aforementioned Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, so I think we often shy away from New England, the New England backfield, or New England a lot of players because of what Belichick likes, his rotation that he has going there. But things are lining up well for Ramondre Stevenson this week. Damien Harris is likely out. I think Ty Montgomery's not back yet. But the Patriots offensive line actually owns the fourth highest run blocking grade so far this year, while the Browns defensive line has struggled against the run, having earned a league low 32.7 run defense grade through 5 weeks this season. That's including Jadeveon Clowney and Myles Garrett in there. The Browns defensive line has allowed the second highest average depth of tackle at 3.51 yards while only coming up with six tackles for loss or no gain all season, which is tied for 29th among all defensive lines. And then lastly, the Browns D-line has allowed a high average yards before contact as well at 1.48, which is important because Ramondre Stevenson is the highest graded running back in the league at 93.6 when given at least 1 yard before contact, which is not asking much of a running back. And going in the trenches like that, looking at New England's offensive line against the Browns defensive line, that's a big boost for him. And he has 9 explosive runs on the season, which is tied for 8th most among running backs. And considering he wasn't an every down player, that's a pretty good rate.
There you go. I was going to say Ramondre Stevenson has juice. Like watch the guy and you're like, this dude is explosive. He's making plays, and it's nice when the data backs that up. And it's nice when he has a matchup against a Cleveland Browns defensive line that hasn't really done what we hoped they would do. Of course, Myles Garrett missed a game week 4 with the car accident and was not his normal self coming off that accident in week 5. But this is a great matchup all the way around. It is a game that I will be tuning into. You know why, John?
Why?
It's Bailey Zappe season, baby.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm trying to think of, like, I don't know why I was thinking about the Browns. But
no, sir. Of course, nothing. I want to watch Debo. No, it's Bailey Zappe season. We're going to enjoy this while we can.
Yeah.
Folks in New England have caught the Zappe fever, and he's the perfect NFL quarterback that is in that backup role. Because he's going to come in, he's going to give you some excitement, he's going to give you some heady plays, some highlights, and then he's going to go back to the bench. Yeah. And he's always going to bring that wave of excitement with him when he comes in. I think he's going to have a very long, profitable career in the NFL. And I'm excited for Lauren and really just Lauren. I don't like other Patriots fans, but I like Lauren. So I'm glad he gets to enjoy Zappe season. And I'll be tuning into this game, and we'll see how Ramondre Stevenson does as well against this Brown defensive line, John.
For sure. Yeah, Zappe, this year's Mike White, right?
That's right. Also from Western Kentucky University, folks. It's QBU over here, man.
Oh, yeah.
I think I looked it up. We have, I believe, 3 of the top 16 seasons all time in terms of passing yards in college football history. Of course, Zappe's number 1. And then I think 2 of Brandon Dowdy's seasons were in the top 15 or 16 as well.
And you're just outside of that, right? When you were the quarterback there?
Yeah, I just missed out.
Just missed out.
I think I was like 17th or 18th.
Okay. Zappe pushed you down.
Zappe pushed me down. Yeah, yeah. So that's what happens. The dude's a freak. So love to see it. WKU, we put up some – it's an exciting brand of football down here in Bowling Green, Kentucky. So speaking of exciting football, John, did not think I would say this about the New York Jets, but this team has had a little bit of life, a little bit of spark ever since the MILF Slayer, Zach Wilson, re-entered the lineup, and you like the matchup for him and one of his wide receivers this weekend. You don't like him. Oh no, that was tragic. I had that beautiful setup there with the MILFs and whatnot. All right, why do we not like Zach Wilson and his wide receiver this weekend, John?
Yeah, we'll cut that. The article is O-line, D-line matchups to target and avoid, right? So I try to mix in some guys in there that you should be avoiding because of the matchup. So Zach Wilson, quarterback for the Jets, as well as wide receiver Elijah Moore, are both in for a tougher matchup this week going against the Packers. The Packers have been one of the most effective defensive lines this season, posting the second highest pressure to sack conversion rate at 28.8%, along with the 7th ranked pass rush grade at 74.7. The Jets offensive line ranks on basically the opposite end of that spectrum with a 53.8 pass blocking grade, which is 28th in the league, and they have allowed the 5th highest pressure rate, 31.3% so far this season. So Wilson himself is going to be the starting quarterback. So since returning to the lineup in week 4, he ranks 27th of 33 qualifying quarterbacks in passing grade. When under pressure, he has a 35.1 passing grade under pressure, and then he's 2nd in turnover worthy play rate at 13.6%, which is very high. His adjusted completion percentage is also among the lowest in the league at 44.4%, with the NFL passer rating of 0.0 under pressure so far this season.
That sounds bad, John. That sounds real bad.
Yeah, it's not great. Not great at all. And then when you look at Elijah Moore, he has essentially been a ghost when the Jets quarterbacks are under pressure, whether it's Joe Flacco or Zach Wilson at the helm. He does lead the team in receiving snaps when there's pressure on the play. So it's not like he's not out there, but he's only managed one reception for 5 yards on 3 targets all season long on those pressure dropbacks. So just another reason to be down on Elijah Moore and Zach Wilson this week.
There you go. I was all excited. I was like, here we go. Jets are taking off, and now you've got them crashing back down to earth. So hate to see it, but I think brighter days ahead for this team, man.
For sure.
Outside of a tough matchup against the Packers this week, I think this is a team that has hit on a couple very important draft picks with Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson. And if Zach Wilson is that guy, then maybe you're cooking. Maybe you've got something going there in New York for the first time in God knows how long. And so it's fun. The NFL, much like when the Jags, the NFL is more fun when the Jags are good. The NFL is more fun when the Jets are good as well.
Yeah. I mean, the NFL is better. Yeah. When everybody is good and they don't suck like what we get from on Thursday Night Football every week.
Man, it has been a lot of suckage this year so far. I feel like the September is the preseason narrative is really bearing right. out this year. And like, this is where like week 1 and 2 would be pretty sloppy. Now we're finally like starting to clear that sloppy zone, and maybe we'll get some more competent football, but boy, it's been pretty ugly thus far this season.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope things turn around. There's been some pretty rough games, and yeah, hopefully as we're recording here and the game enters the second half, that, you know, things are, it's like a 35-28 game or something like that, and the offenses are just lighting it up, and Cole Holcomb's racking up tackles like crazy, Cam Curl's making plays, hopefully. But are you looking it up right now? What is the score?
It's 7-3. The Bears are up at the end of the third quarter, so we may get a lower output than what we got in Colts Broncos.
At least there was a touchdown.
At least there was a touchdown. That is true. Amazon also paid like billions of dollars for this, like $11 billion for this package of games.
Oh,
so
my God.
Good investment by them thus far. You've got Tony Gonzalez throwing the game under the bus. So great stuff thus far from Thursday Night Football. So there you go, folks.
Yeah, it's going to be streaming on Glitch next year.
Oh, Glitch. That's right. Shout out, Bob. We're going to bring that back. That was your segment idea, and I love it. Anytime Bob gets to go out and wade into the world of like current happenings and what's going on with the youths, it's always good intentional comedy. So we're going to try that again. Not great, Bob. Maybe making a return to the next week's recap podcast. So stay tuned, folks.
Can't wait.
It should be good to stream. And it's funny that our YouTube video gets taken out by a glitch. So I think Bob spoke that into existence with his mix up there.
That's a good chance. But
good chance. So 57 minutes of fantasy football talk, folks. It is time to talk a little pop culture. As we mentioned on the last preview episode, we are nothing if not nerds. So we'd like to send y'all out with some pop culture things that we have been enjoying. Again, if you want to check these out, make the decision yourself to check them out. If you don't like them, don't tell us. We don't care. We're still going to enjoy these things on our own terms. But John, I'll kick us off here. I've been enjoying some fun TV and some good shows on the horizon. If you're into like half hour sitcoms, there is a great one right now. I mentioned Abbott Elementary last time we were together. It has been fantastic this season, coming back for its second year. But there's another one that I think is probably one of the most meta sitcoms I've ever seen. It's called Reboot. It's on Hulu. And the show is basically about rebooting a show from, I think, the 90s or 2000s. The studio that's rebooting the show is Hulu. So it's just very meta. And then you have a great cast. Johnny Knoxville is in this show. You have the delight, the absolute scene stealer every time he's on screen is Paul Reiser. Of course, a lot of folks would know Paul Reiser from his role in Stranger Things. He's the doctor that Eleven works with. He's the old showrunner for the original version of Step Right Up, the sitcom. And he is working with his daughter on this new iteration of Step Right Up. So it's just been a real delight, John. I like when I'm like, all right, I'll check this out and see how things go. And things end up being like way better than what you expected. Those are my favorite types of TV shows. And this one definitely falls into that category.
That really is the best thing. And yeah, that does sound fun, actually. It's funny. I saw a reboot on here. Do you remember there was like a, it was like an animated, like a CGI kind of like cartoony, like in the 90s called Reboot?
I don't know.
You don't? Okay. Well, hopefully it wasn't just a Canada thing, but
hopefully it wasn't just a figment of your imagination.
that could be worse.
That could be it as well.
That was the first thing I thought of. I thought maybe this was a reboot of the show Reboot. I don't know what channel it was. It was on YTV over here. I don't think YTV is an American channel, but anyways, that has nothing to do with what you're talking about.
It is not a reboot of this made up Canadian show. No, yeah, no. It is a very funny meta sitcom. So check it out. It's on Hulu. I think they're like 6 or 7 episodes in at this point. So plenty of time to catch up if you want. Coming up here, I always like to hit y'all with some things that are pending that are going to be dropping here soon. So a couple of my favorites are coming back to Netflix here in just a little bit. Unsolved Mysteries, John. The Netflix version. I'm a true crime junkie. This is one of my favorite podcast genres. I basically listen to either murder or football. That's really the full spectrum of podcasts for me, is murder or football. So this, they have the Unsolved Mysteries podcast. If you haven't checked that out, oh my God, it's my favorite podcast right now. It's incredible. Every week, the voiceover guy, Steve French, is amazing. The audio quality is the best in the game right now. That podcast sounds freaking amazing. And all the mysteries, John, they are unsolved and they are juicy. They're so much fun. But the Netflix show is coming back for season 3. They have 9 episodes. So 3 episodes per week starting next week for the next 3 weeks. So you got 9 total episodes, and the early buzz is very good. I'm super excited. The Netflix iteration is different. It doesn't have Robert Stack, so there's not the like kind of presence with the host, but it works. It's different, but it's still really good. So if you enjoy true crime, you have the 3rd season of Unsolved Mysteries dropping on October 18th. The same day, John, another delightful show, Somebody Feed Phil, drops season 6. That's Phil Rosenthal, who was the co-creator of Everybody Loves Raymond. This show is like, if you love travel food shows, I think this one is one of the best. It's hilarious. When we were in Venice, we actually ate at a couple of spots that Phil ate at in the Venice episode, including one where Allie took a picture in his exact seat and he shared it on his Instagram. Because she tagged him in the post. So that was pretty cool. And probably if you ask Allie, the highlight of our culinary experiences in Venice was trying to find this restaurant that Phil visited that is a legit hole in a wall. When I say that we walked around the building where this restaurant was located 3 times, we're pulling out GPS coordinates trying to find this place. We finally found it. It is about the size of like a half of a school classroom. Like it's tiny. It's a closet. And it was just one other family, the owner and the main chef, the owner of the restaurant's like feeding my son pasta. They have this incredible giant pork chop that has vinegar on it. That sounds really weird. But if you ask Allie, it was her favorite thing she ate while we were in Venice. So check out the show. It'll make you hungry. It'll make you laugh. And I promise you will enjoy it. So Somebody Feed Phil, Unsolved Mysteries season 3, dropping on October 18th.
Wow. Yeah, that's okay. Those are some good ones. I mean, so I think I've heard of Somebody Feed Phil. I haven't seen it. And then Unsolved Mysteries, I have not seen either. But I mean, if there's one thing Netflix does well, it's murder porn, right? This is what's
right. If you want murder, Netflix is the network that you want. My Everything God. On there is so good.
I was just thinking too. You said murder and football. I was thinking you probably love the OJ documentaries that they put.
Oh together. My God, the OJ documentaries. Oh, come on. And yeah. then the FX series, American Crime Story or whatever it was. That was tremendous. It was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah. I mean, Cuba Gooding Jr. as OJ Simpson. It's a bit of a stretch, but my God, the acting in that show was incredible. Yeah. So check out both the OJ documentary and the FX series as well. And I'll wrap it up here, John. You know, I like to write and have written some books and enjoy reading books. And so I always like to recommend The Written Word, as well as the murder porn on Netflix when we get on here together. So my last recommendation is from my favorite sports writer at the moment, Jeff Perlman. He's written some amazing books. Football for a Buck was the story of the USFL, the original version. Holy cow. Check that out if you haven't. Absolutely one of the best books I have ever read. Jeff Perlman, his superpower is that he does so much research that these books read like novels because there's so much detail packed in there. And for this book, which is The Last Folk Hero, it's about Bo Jackson, comes out on October 25th. Perlman conducted 720 interviews for this book.
God.
Just imagine that, 720 interviews for this book. So the level of detail is going to be insane, and I promise you, if you like Bo Jackson, have heard of Bo Jackson, if you enjoy reading really good sports writing, this book is going to blow us away. Take it to the bank.
Wow. That's impressive. 720 interviews. Like, I can't even wrap my head around that. That's insane.
That would almost be doing like one per day for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, or two per day for an entire year, just about. So I can't wait. This is what Perlman specializes in. So knowing he did that many interviews to write about Bo Jackson is so very exciting. So check it out. The Last Folk Hero, October 25th. I've already pre-ordered my copy off Amazon. So excited to dig into that. But John, what's going on in your world with pop culture, man? Hit me with it.
Oh, man. Well, I'm a little behind on most things. I haven't had a chance to watch a ton since the season started. But last time we were here, I did finish Better Call Saul.
Oh, man. Okay, so no spoilers. We won't. Yeah. I know there's some folks that are still catching up. But what did you think of the final season? And what did you think of the way they landed the plane with the finale?
Man, I thought about that finale for like 3 days after, because I was like, this is... It was perfect. I thought they brought everything together perfectly. I thought the motivations behind his decision making and hers and everybody involved, it was just like an absolute masterclass that what they did there. And yeah, that final season was excellent. I mean, it's so hard to talk about without like spoiling anything.
Yeah,
it was excellent. I absolutely loved it, man. Bob Odenkirk he's unbelievable. Rhea Seehorn she's still just amazing. She just crushes it. It's so impressive. And everybody that worked on that show, there wasn't a weak link on that show. And yeah, I couldn't have come away more impressed with how that ended.
That show really found its legs once it realized that Rhea Seehorn was the co-star of the show, essentially.
Yeah.
Once they realized it was 1A and 1B with her and Bob Odenkirk. So love the final season. That the midpoint of the season with the shocking scene there. Again, no spoilers, but if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. I don't know that there are many scenes in television history that have dropped my jaw like that one did. And then to see the fallout from what happens in that episode. And then, like I said, I think when we were talking about it off air, the way that that show enriches your enjoyment of Breaking Bad, of El Camino, when you look at all of those three properties together, the cohesive story that they tell and the way the layers just like beautifully overlap and the way what happens in Saul makes you feel better or more fulfilled about what happened in Breaking Bad and vice versa. I mean, it's just like, it is a masterclass in storytelling.
Yeah.
Bob Odenkirk in that finale was like lights out. give them all the awards, give them all the praise. Better Call Saul plus Breaking Bad plus El Camino. I mean, what a universe that Vince Gilligan built for us. And I'm so excited that he gets to partner with Rhea Seehorn again for the Apple TV show. That's going to be great. I'm so excited.
Oh yeah. No, Apple TV is absolutely crushing it actually, because
they really are.
Yeah. That was my next, recommendation is one that I actually watched, basically the last week, the last 7 days or so, I pumped it out. And, but yeah, just quickly back to that Better Call. So I legitimately in awe. I cannot believe there was so much rich story to tell from the character that we saw in Breaking Bad with Saul Goodman, and how they fleshed that out over six seasons and just created one of the best shows that I've ever seen.
Agreed. It's one that I think would warrant multiple viewings, because I think especially if you watch that in tandem with Breaking Bad, like if you kind of matched up the story, the kind of timelines, and like started Breaking Bad there in the final season of a Better Call Saul, when the storylines start to overlap, man, that would be so much fun to go back and do that, because it's just masterful storytelling. But what's your next recommendation from Apple TV? I'm curious here.
Yeah, so I just put it on because I did want something to talk about for the podcast, and I saw it was only six episodes, and it's Blackbird.
Yes, I've heard about this.
Yeah, so it's Taron Egerton, mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Yeah, from the Kingsman series.
Exactly, yeah. And I can't remember the other character's name, but basically it's based on a true story, or they say inspired by a true story. They always reword it in a different way so that they could play with things. So you know,
inspired by a true story means like we're taking a lot of creative liberties.
We're taking some
here.
Liberties, yeah. So, but from what I could tell, like a lot of it is true. I haven't done like extensive research after finishing the show, but I probably dive down the rabbit hole at some point. But what it is basically, so Taron Egerton plays like a drug dealer, gets sentenced to like 10 years in prison kind of thing, and the FBI cuts him a deal that if he's because of his personality and you know, him being this likable person that, you know, could get people to talk and make them feel comfortable and things like that, they cut him this deal to basically befriend this serial killer that's in prison there, to try and get coerce either a confession or like a tell him where, you know, bodies are buried or something like that. Anything that they can use against this guy, because he's about to be let out on an appeal, basically. So, yeah, without giving too much away, it just ended up being really, really, really interesting and good story, really good acting. Taron Egerton was awesome in it. I wish I remember the guy's name, but he plays Stingray in Cobra Kai.
Yeah, it's Paul Walter Hauser.
I knew it was three names. But.
Yeah, it's Larry Hall, and then Ray Liotta is actually in there as well.
Yeah, Ray Liotta's in there, and Greg Kinnear. That one was really good. I really enjoyed that. It's dark. I will say it's pretty dark, pretty heavy. It's, you know, if you're not into that kind of thing, I wouldn't recommend it. But as for somebody who likes the unsolved mystery kind of things like you do, I think you would enjoy that one at least. But Blackbird, Apple TV, man, everything I've watched, like Severance, we've talked about Severance, but it is. That was by far my favorite show from this year, because I've never seen anything like it. That was one of the best things. So Apple TV is A+ for me.
A+. And a couple other recommendations, just bonus recs here, talking Apple TV. Check out Mosquito Coast, coming back with season two here this month. Fantastic show, really enjoyable. About a family on the run because of what one or both of the parents did. They're on the run. They journey into Mexico. They're kind of on the lam, having to evade authorities. And then you also have Mythic Quest. Yes. Sean, did you ever check out Mythic Quest?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I love Rob McElhenney because of Always Sunny. So I definitely watched Mythic Quest. And then your recommendation from last time, Welcome to Wrexham. We get things a lot slower here in Canada. So it just hit Disney Plus here in Canada this week. So I've added it to my list. Olivia and I are going to check that one out this week or next week for sure. So I'll probably have watched that by next time.
There you go. So we can talk about Welcome to Wrexham. Just got renewed for season two, I saw. And I think they just dropped their final episodes this week. So that's on FX and Hulu if you want to check it out. Any other Wrex here, John, before we wrap up?
Just thinking. I didn't put anything in the notes. Well, nothing really. Like I watch She-Hulk. You know, being a Marvel simp that I am.
I was going to say, I think there's a reason She-Hulk didn't make it into the quote unquote recommendations.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. It is what it is. I watch it because it's Marvel basically. And it's light and I can watch it with my wife. But other than that, there's not like a ton of redeeming qualities from it. Although, you know, there's some fun stuff, some good stuff that comes out of it, but it's a lot of the bad is bad. So
a lot of the bad is bad.
I'll leave it at that. Yeah.
There you go. Well, you have to have shows that you watch with your spouse. We've talked about this before. You got to have solo shows. You got to have shows you watch with them so that you can always have something to watch no matter who's sitting next to you or not sitting next to you when you go to watch TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's important.
Yeah, no, for sure. She doesn't want to watch football or hockey every night, so got to find a compromise in there somewhere. And since it's Marvel, it works for me.
Yeah, well, hopefully you guys will enjoy Welcome to Wrexham a little more than She-Hulk.
Yeah.
But this has been Pop Culture Chatter. Like we said, check out some of these things or don't. It's up to you. These are just things that we enjoy. We're not just football dorks. We are football dorks, but we're dorks in general. We are a broader variety of dorks than just for football. So we always like to bring a little bit of fun to the end of these episodes. But John is doing the Lord's work over at PFF. You can check out his rankings. You can check out the utilization report and the OLDL matchups to target and avoid. Sorry to the MILF Slayer, Zach Wilson and Elijah Moore. So, John, what do you have coming up? Are you doing anything besides those projects? Are you just trying to kind of like survive in advance week to week here? What's going on?
Yeah, that I think the latter mostly. I'm basically Jesse Pinkman at the end of Breaking Bad, tied to the
in the like pit the with the long beard.
No, I shouldn't say that. I enjoy what I do.
Notice how he just nervously laughs, like, oh God, what if Chris? If Chris Collinsworth hears this?
I'm just kidding. No, but it's just very busy. But yeah, those are the main things: utilization report, rankings every week, and O-line D-line matchups drop on Friday. So just a taste this week, but there's a lot more stuff in there that we didn't cover today. So you can check that out tomorrow on PFF.com.
There you go. Check it out. And John, thank you for joining me once again. We will be back, I believe. So we did week two. We did week six. Well, we do the week 10 preview. So we'll be coming back at you all. Here in about a month. I've been enjoying these episodes, John. Thank you for jumping in here. At least I spared you the misery of Thursday Night Football. So you're welcome, I guess.
No, I appreciate it. I'm not even going to watch the end of it. I'm probably just watch like Avs Flames or something like that. Hockey, that is. That's hockey. I'll probably watch that over what the end of Thursday Night Football now.
What is this hockey you speak of? No, go Preds. I'm hopeful to make it down to a Preds game. That's my goal for sports watching this year, is go get down to a Nashville Predators game. So go Preds. It's a good year. It's a good time of year. If you're a sports fan, you got the baseball playoffs, you got basketball coming back, you've got hockey, both kinds of football. Go enjoy the beautiful weather. Go enjoy all the sports. Good luck this weekend. Hope you all have enjoyed this week six preview. We will be back on Monday or Tuesday with the week six recap. Thank you all for the feedback on the game by game. We're going to keep that rolling. So look forward to that as well. Be sure you check out John's work over at PFF. He is at PFF_Macri. I am at Josh Raymer, and the show is at the IDP Show. Until next week, take care. We'll see y'all soon. And you're my favorite youth. Like a drop-top sports car, rooftop view. Let's go down to the boulevard, and we'll play it cool. And life shouldn't